Spirit Radio Podcasts. The best of the morning show on Spirit Radio.
Cathy Sorahan is a personal trainer and founder of Women on the Run. She was with me this week to talk about a natural biological process in women, which is, for some, still a delicate topic. Menopause.
Yeah, it's kind of like still not really spoken about, which is amazing in this day and age.
You are so
right. Suggesting to a lady that might be coming in for an assessment to me that some of the things that she's experiencing might be the start of menopause. It can be a dangerous process because I might get the head knocked off me.
Yeah. Absolutely,
But the fact is, women are actually physiologically menopausing earlier, and we reckon that some of that is due to stress levels in the human being, because we've never been in a faster changing society in the history of mankind, which is over 200,000 years old now. And with the internet and all of the AI, changes approaching us, women in particular tend to be the worriers in the household. They're worrying about their children, they're worrying about themselves, they're worrying about their husband losing the job, you know, because obviously everybody's financially dependent on somebody.
Yeah, and in a way, women at the heart of the family sometimes can become like the lightning rod for all the stress.
Exactly.
And they just kind of almost like they conduct the stress into themselves.
And, you know, a teenager going through their hormonal changes pitched against a woman who's to start into menopause, it can be very stressful for the whole house. It doesn't just affect the woman, it can affect the men as well. And no one's educating people about it. It's not spoken about in school.
It isn't. You're absolutely right.
No.
It's funny, and through my own practice as a therapist, you're the exactly same thing. I had a very similar situation where, you know, somebody of a particular age is in and you're going, this is hormonal.
Yeah.
I'm not saying anything.
Absolutely.
You know? And I know as a therapist you should, but it's just,
A lot of the GPs that would be recommending, you know, blood tests and stuff, what I found is a lot of the girls come back to me and say, look, the reason I booked you, number one, was because you're of the age that I need to talk to somebody about, someone who's been through. I've been through menopause myself.
Yeah.
I went through an early one after my mum died. It wasn't fun. I was grieving for my mother at the same time as experiencing what the hell has gone on with my body.
Yeah.
I was presenting to companies doing corporate talks and I'd be like on fire.
Yes.
Literally my face would be the colour of the speaker here.
I'd say even when you couldn't necessarily see it, you still felt like
absolutely.
Sure.
So a lot of girls will be sent to the doctor, or somebody at home will say, why don't you go and see the doctor, there's something wrong with you. And you go and then you say, okay, blood test came back negative, I'm not going through it yet, all of the symptoms are there, and you could still be having a period even though it might be getting a bit erratic and irregular.
So is that perimenopause?
Perimenopause. And
so explain what that is then.
Well, it can start at any age really, but I mean, usually around the 46, and what's happening to the body physiologically is that your estrogen levels are starting to drop very gradually. So there's an unexplained weight gain. I'm doing all the working out that I normally do, but yet I'm starting to gain weight.
Okay.
I'm not eating bad stuff. I'm eating well, but I'm still starting to put on weight. My middle is starting to get
thicker. That kind of male pattern, kind of middle.
I'm irritable with the kids. I'm crying at night because I lost it with the teenager. I'm sorry I did that now, and the pattern starts to keep evolving. There's a tiredness that comes into the body that you're kind of going, well, why am I so tired? I'm not doing anything. I haven't increased my workload.
Extra.
And then also with it is that some people just find themselves, feeling weepy, which again is a natural phenomenon, because as your estrogen levels are dropping, your body is actually going into a kind of a grief process. So you don't understand this because no one tells you or prepares you as a young girl in her prime, as a woman in her prime, or the boys what you can expect when you know your wife starts to feel these things. How do you cope with that? What do you say to her? A lot of women will say to me, my husband just laughs at me and goes, I'll go on and take a cold shower like you tell me to. This sort of stuff. Which is not helpful.
Helpful it is not.
There is a woman who's invented an amazing bed in America where it responds to the woman's temperature, and basically the duvet chills down at night as her body starts to go overheating.
Brilliant.
And that's the problem with the estrogen levels. Your thermometer, your internal thermometer goes crazy and you can overheat.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you want the windows open when everyone else in the house is freezing.
That's right. See, if ever there was a time when you need a double electric blanket,
yes,
except
yeah.
you need the lots, reverse of electric
lots
blankets.
Lots of couples end up going into separate beds and separate yeah. bedrooms over
yeah.
this, which
yeah.
is quite sad because what happens then is yeah. intimacy drops off.
Of course.
And, you know.
And actually, you know, you've brought up the point. Isolation. Because how could that experience not be isolating?
It is very isolating.
Because, you yeah. know, when you're going through something, and effectively people doing their best to understand, but with the best will in the world,
yeah.
you know, nobody knows exactly what that's like, except somebody else who's going through it.
Absolutely.
So you could really feel like an alien in
yeah. a lot of the girls that come in to me would say, you know, oh God, it's so nice to be able to sit down and talk with you because I felt I was going mad.
Yeah,
and, you know, centuries
yeah.
ago, women were locked up that were going through menopause. They wrote them off as being crazy.
Yeah.
The French forgive you if you kill the husband who's gone off with the younger yeah. model yeah. during that period of your life. I'm not suggesting for a minute that should be yeah. approved.
Exactly.
But I
Thank
do
you.
Think that there needs to be more understanding. And I think also the physiological changes where you're losing muscle tone and bone density losses, you know, are occurring, that can be a very tragic. I mean, particularly if somebody has based a lot of their life around their appearance,
yeah.
and then suddenly their body changes,
Absolutely.
And their muscles are slackening, yeah. and the face doesn't quite look what it used to, and
yeah.
then, you know, someone walks up to you and goes, oh, I didn't recognize you. I mean, wow.
The Best of the Morning Show.
This week, we had Red Wednesday, a day when churches and other public buildings were lit up in red as a way of showing solidarity to people who are suffering persecution and even death for their faith. John Newton, press officer with Aid to the Church in Need, told me what Red Wednesday is all about.
It's very much about raising awareness about the persecution of our brothers and sisters, and the reason it's needed is that people aren't really aware of what's going on. If we take someone like Burma, for example, people know that about the Rohingya Muslims being persecuted, and that's a terrible plight, and I wouldn't want to detract from that.
Yeah.
But equally, in the north of the country, throughout the same period, the Kachin Christians have been equally subject to torture, to death. They've even been used to clear landmines. Churches have been burnt down. You know, you've got Kachin Christians living in concentration camps, a bit too extreme, but they are in camps. Mm. There are many living in the jungles wild because they've had their villages destroyed. And that's a tragedy affecting an ethnic group, which is a majority Christian ethnic group. And we just don't hear about these things.
Not even mentioned.
No. So Red Wednesday is for them to draw awareness to their plight, to their problems and to their situation.
I was surprised again, you know, we talk, statistics, but the statistic that really blew my mind was that 80% of all acts of religious persecution are committed against Christians.
Yes.
I mean, that is gobsmacking. I would never have mm-hmm. thought that was even possibly true.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
I mean, another statistic which we particularly were struck by was that in 73 countries, Christians are suffering high, very high, or extreme level of persecution.
73.
The persecution is at least high.
Because, you know, in terms of the UN, I think we're only talking about 180 countries in all in the entire world.
Yes.
Like, you know, so 73 is, you know, a massive number.
Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was estimated that in the top 50 worst countries, 11 Christians are being killed every day.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So we is it true? I mean, I've heard it said that there have never been as many martyrdoms as there are currently. Mm-hmm. Something like that. Is that possibly true?
Yes.
It's hard.
Yes.
Yeah. It's easy for us in the West. And again, I use the word, you know, West, you know, guidedly, but to think that talk of persecution of Christians is an exaggeration. But we find it hard to imagine Christians as a poor, often uneducated, oppressed minority. Would you say that's fair?
I'd say that's fair. If you look at countries like India or Pakistan, thinking of the south of Pakistan, where there are many Christian and indeed Hindu girls as well are kidnapped and forced into marriage, sometimes abused in horrible ways, the Christians and the Hindus in that part of Pakistan are very poor. They are labourers, they have very basic jobs, and because they are poor, they have no power, and because they have no power, those faith communities are seen as legitimate targets by members, extremist members of the majority faith. And yes, so poverty equals powerlessness, equals your religious community being targeted.
Yeah, And you know, it's only through my work here and talking to people such as yourself, John, that I've realised that even things like, you know, having a Bible or making the sign of the cross, these things become really, really powerful signifiers and can get you in real trouble.
Oh yes, when Kim Jong-un took over as president or whatever his title is for North Korea, he actually reinstated public executions as a sign to the country that he was in charge. And in one of the first public executions, apparently in a sports stadium, 80 people were killed. But among those who were killed were people who had been found guilty of possessing Bibles.
Yeah.
For just owning a Bible.
Just owning a Bible.
They ended up being executed.
Yeah.
Which is, it's mind-boggling.
Yeah.
You know, we can't even imagine, you know, that for owning a Bible or another religious book over here, we might end up losing our lives.
Yeah.
It's
extraordinary. And you know, the funny thing is, I always feel like in Ireland we have a very powerful connection, because at least in folk memory, you know, because it was such a predominantly Catholic population, and we had, and the penal laws,
yes,
you know, in Britain they had impact, but here it was pretty much applied to almost everybody.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
so that was, and that's, you know, it was only 1833 that they were kind of, yeah, eventually. So that's, you know, it's not living memory, but my great grandfather was born in the 1840s, you, yes, know what I mean? So it's not that far away. So you have that feeling of, like, actually on some level, word of mouth, stories, people have a connection with what it is to be persecuted for believing something.
Absolutely. I mean, the penal times, you're quite right. It affected Ireland massively. Also affected parts of England, Wales,
of course,
and Scotland,
yeah,
as well.
Sure, indeed.
Anywhere the Catholic faith was,
yeah,
it was illegal to be Catholic.
Yeah.
And so Mass had to be done in secret. The sacraments had to be done in secret. Priests had to be hidden away in priest holes and kept very quiet about.
The Best of the Morning Show.
The Festival of Politics took place in Dublin last weekend, and one of the people that it looked at was, surprisingly, Jesus Christ. Pat Coyle, Director of Communications with the Irish Jesuits, accepted the challenge to participate in the session, Jesus Christ, Political Superstar. Here, Pat tells me why Jesus is a more interesting figure from a historical and political perspective than people realise.
I have read a book, and some of your listeners may have read it too. It's a book by Jose Pagola called Jesus, a Historical Approximation. And he is a biblical scholar. He's a Spanish priest. And it's been his 30 years life work, this book. And he's read everything there is to be read. And it's a book that I gave and asked my son when he said, I've lost my faith, Mum, I'm sorry, it doesn't do anything for me anymore. And I said, that's fine, Paul, but like, what faith have you lost? Who do,
yeah,
you believe in? What is it that you're letting
go? Very good question. Yeah, very,
yeah,
good question.
So, because maybe I agree with you in what you're losing.
Yeah.
But I said, like, whatever way you dress it, up or down, this man, Jesus Christ, was a historical figure. We have it from the annals. We have it from Philo and from Jewish writers,
Josephus,
historians and,
yeah,
philosophers of the time.
Yeah.
He existed. He was real. And he made this impact. So who was he? And I said, well, would you read this book? Now, it's a tome, but it's a beautiful book.
Is it?
And
wow,
he wrote it because he wanted people to love Jesus or to know this person and come to know and love him as he did. And that has been something for me that, you know, even Ronan, when debates get up and down, like, I have a faith. I choose to believe. I don't know. I can never prove,
sure,
it.
Sure, of course, yeah.
But the bottom line is, I actually don't care, because if I am happy to throw my hat in the ring with everything that Jesus Christ stood for.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward, if it was all an illusion, and if it's all over when we die, I am glad that there was somebody like Jesus Christ who trod this earth and who had that vision, and who had that vision for humanity, for people, for what our relationship with God can be, and for what a kind of society that we could build, and the community that we should be building for each other. Because, you know, we take a look around our world, we look at our own society, we look at the problems that we have, homelessness, children living in hotels, being born into homelessness,
yeah,
poverty, addiction. These are the issues that Jesus said he came to address.
Yeah, Absolutely. People forget if you stop reading your gospel and you stop reading the life, you actually lose touch with just how utterly radical he was, like the way he would include women in a way that Absolutely. Probably wasn't of its day, and the way he would, you know, the way he would reach out to people who were pariahs, and you know, just whether they happen to be tax collectors or you know, Pharisees, or whether they happen to be the lepers, or you know what I mean?
Absolutely. And like you talked there about tax collectors, Pagolo Ment says in his book, like tax collectors were politically especially loathed by the people, because A, they were of the people, so they were collaborators with the Roman occupation. B, they took their money, and the people had nothing. Like a lot of the people who paid the most taxes were the poorest. Even the peasants who ploughed their fields, they had to pay a tax on everything. And he goes through all that.
It's like the Irish Gombeen man in the 19th century, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Very similar,
And then they pocketed some of the money for themselves. So they, not only were they oppressing, you know, collaborating and in the oppression, they were also taking a little bit more for themselves. And then you read a gospel like the Gospel of Zacchaeus. And, you know, he was a tax collector. And the people are saying, this guy, and suddenly, what, I'm going to eat in your house.
Yeah.
You know, but it's
absolutely.
Not eating your house because everything's okay. It's when you encounter me, and because you've already sensed something about me that's calling to your deeper self, that you encounter me, I eat with you, that beautiful me, that you know, I don't put you down, I don't condemn you, I call your name, you see who I am and what I stand for, and then you say, you know what, I'm giving away. I'm making restitution, I'm not doing this anymore, I'm halving my wealth. And that's the kind of encounter that scandalizes people, and it scandalized the people at the time, but it's uncompromising. And I think it's interesting, Ronan, that with all those sections that you mentioned, like when Jesus preached his manifesto, if you want to look at his political manifesto, as you know, he opens the scroll of Isaiah and says, he sent me to bring the good news to the poor, to proclaim liberty to captives, you know, and then he gives the Beatitudes on the mountain. Like, what a marvelous manifesto are the Beatitudes. And the people who responded to that were the poor, and were the people who felt the burden of exclusion or being outside of the power. So all the time you look at the life of Jesus, and it is a critique of speaking truth to power, he spoke it to everybody, but the ones who really flocked to him were those who really were at the bottom of the society. And then I think it's kind of interesting, you had then the people like Nicodemus and people coming undercover at night, or Simon getting a bit interested, or the Roman soldier.
Yeah,
who saw something, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and you could tell they were the unusual ones, but nevertheless you could tell that they could like see with different eyes than their peers, their colleagues. Yeah.
And the kind of, if you saw, you were welcome.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't that, well, no, I'm sorry, you're a Roman soldier, you're out.
Yeah.
You know, you were included. But then of course the encounter usually brought conversion to the vision of community and society that Jesus had for everybody.
The Best of the Morning Show on Spirit Radio.
It's great to see an Irish company coming out with a new Bible app that could have huge international potential. It's called Journey Bible, and I talked to Bernard Harris, director of the new company behind this initiative, Wild Goose Publishing.
So, a brand new publishing company we set up just recently this year in April. It was last year where I felt I'd love an adventure from God, and
wow,
he said, right, publishing, it came left field. My background is in marketing, so
never done publishing before.
So I've never, and
wow.
I had a huge network, and have a huge network in Ireland and in America of publishers. And I've been mentored over the last couple of months by people from Nelson Publishing, which
wow.
is really big, huge.
Wow.
And they've been so supportive, really incredible. I've had a connection through Ransomed Heart in America, who
brilliant, great people, absolutely
helped me to navigate this area. And then God has put so many people in my life, immediate life, to set me up really, really well.
So the mission is kingdom, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
So in a way, you're trying to publish stuff that are in kind of in line with that. Yeah. So is this the first thing you've done? Is this your first project in terms of publishing?
So we have three pillars, or three things and three areas that we really want to push. One is author publishing. We want warrior poets, rebel Brilliant. Authors to come in, Brilliant. And we believe that's in line with the plans Ireland God has for Ireland, a renaissance of. And a revolution, nearly, of Christian writers in Ireland.
You're singing my song, Bernard. Well done, man. That's great.
And we feel we have a real big part to play in that.
Brilliant.
And we believe that God is doing it again, exactly what he did many moons ago with Patrick, Brendan, Whoa. Colin Keel, all these guys.
Oh, yeah.
Who are you know, so...
now you're talking. It's great.
Yeah,
it's
really good. Brilliant. So that's one of our pillars. The next pillar came left field was the Journey Bible app. Which it's great to be able to talk to that now in a minute. And,
yeah, sure.
And then the other pillar is next year we're aiming to do a Bible version in print, Bible version of this, and we're trying to negotiate with different translations at the moment, which is a journey in itself, and we want to release the Wild Goose Journey Bible next year, with a heart of. You buy one Bible and we're going to send another Bible free elsewhere to people who don't Brilliant. Have a Bible. And Brilliant. That's our heart. We feel that that's missional.
Yeah, it is.
Missional.
Yeah, can you imagine the impact of that? Yeah, amazing.
We want that to come from Ireland. We really do. We feel that that's the adventure God has for us.
So going back to the idea of, you know, that idea of the warrior poets and rebel authors, I would imagine... You know, being a writer myself, you need to kind of hold hands a little bit, don't you? You need to actually do for those writers.
Yeah.
I suppose mentoring, is that what you call it?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's funny how these skills over my career, right, in marketing and coaching and in leadership, have now I've been able to utilise these skill sets.
Yeah.
And the people in my network that we have on the team are able to help as well. So we have Celtic... individuals across the world who are reaching out and we're helping to navigate their gift that's inside them that God has given them and how to put that out on paper and how to get that out to an audience that is, we believe, in desperate need of some of the messages that are in the hearts of God's people.
Super. And you know, I suppose, like, I know myself, like, one of the great gifts that I had was having somebody in the UK who was just a really, really good editor.
Yes.
And it was able to help me not just, you know, decide what wouldn't go in, but just go, do you know, this sounds like this is what you should be doing here.
Yeah.
I've seen part of your material and going, this is a direction. So that's kind of a big thing too, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, hugely so. Yeah. So at the moment we have four authors we're taking through that journey at
Brilliant.
The moment.
And wow.
At the moment four, we're like, wow, this is incredible. They came out
that's
of nowhere.
Massive,
literally saw the website from, so we've Americans, we've New Zealand all the way there. So that's a time zone difference and a half, but it's amazing. And helping them via editing some of their work, obviously it's very precious to them.
Sure.
So we do it prayerfully and skillfully.
Yes, exactly. And skillfully is right because, this is their baby, right?
Oh, big time.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So you kind of try to tell them in the nicest possible way. Have you thought about it?
And look, it's a journey and it's a passion. And when they see that this rough diamond starts to turn into a beautiful, you know, real precious diamond for the kingdom, it's incredible.
Yeah,
really
wonderful.
Fantastic.
Wonderful, really important work too. So let's talk about the app. So first of all, where did the idea come from?
Brilliant. So I suppose over the years I've always tried to capture in my physical Bible, you know, some topics and key verses that I wanted to go back to. So one of the key things that I had in my Bible was daily truths that I just wanted to meditate on and realign myself with God and who I am in God and on my daily journey. And like that, I can't carry my Bible around all the time, you know, and it is difficult. So I wanted an app so that I could capture all my favorite verses in one way, and I can, you know, even add pictures to those verses, pictures from books, for example. I'm reading a book at the moment, and I can capture a page from the book and attach it to a verse. That just really brings things to life for me, and I wanted that desperately transposed from my current Bible, which is full of tabs, etc.
Exactly.
You can imagine, into an app that I can have in my pocket and I can just sit and meditate on God's word.
The best of the morning show.
Therese Davy is never short of timely advice and ideas for saving money, getting bargains, and carrying out seasonal chores which keep the household on the straight and narrow. This was Therese's first tip for this week.
Stamps.
Oh, indeed, yes.
Interesting subject to start on Monday morning with.
Only time of the year that I ever go and buy them, so you're absolutely right.
Buy a regular pack of Christmas stamp cards where you get one free at the best
Good.
Of times.
Brilliant.
But if you buy a packet of international stamps with it, you get 150 off.
Oh, very good. Yeah, so the international stamps are they 150?
For the rest of the world.
Yes.
I can't remember the price now.
So it's a euro for here, right? And it's, yeah, I know what you mean. For that smallest size, it's, I can't remember. I'm going to have to go and have a look. But anyway, listen, sorry for asking you the question.
Without checking that you knew
the answer.
And they had, but the international stamps are for all the rest of the world. But the other thing about those stamp packets, if stamp prices ever go up,
yes,
you don't need to add the new increase to those stamps.
I never knew that.
Because there's no price on them. They're N or they're W for world or national or whatever. So if you have old ones in the house,
yeah,
just because the stamp price has gone up, it doesn't mean you have to put on little stamps
never
extra
knew that.
On them.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very simple. The lady in the post office told me that.
Gosh.
Because everyone has odd stamps.
Yeah.
And seemingly you have to bring the odd stamps to the post office to show them you have odd stamps before they give you the few pence extra ones to make it up to the current price.
That's
which
true.
It's a bit daft, but it's something about reducing paper or something or being sure they're not wasting money. But if you have those generic stamps with no prices on them, they'll do you forever.
That's amazing. And again, I hadn't realised they'd done that. Actually, it just shows you how long it is since I've actually needed to go out and purchase a stamp. So they're using N for national and W for world.
I think that's what it is, this is a little letter without a price. Just a little letter, and you can use them. But send a letter this year. It's lovely to get a letter. I think it's lovely to get a letter,
get
a card and open it.
Absolutely lovely. You know. And to see somebody's handwriting is such a beautiful thing. You so rarely see it nowadays.
Absolutely.
What's our job of the week this week, Trace?
Our job of the week is use up what you have.
Oh, very good.
Everywhere.
Yes.
Do a raid of the freezer, the fridge, every cupboard you have, and use up all the food you have in the bottom of the freezer, that emergency pack of pasta, that tin of beans, or whatever it is. Get creative. Get inventive. But do it to avoid the waste, because we waste so much food in this country.
So true. So true. And actually, you're dead right. The idea of, if you haven't been first time round, put a sticker on or a label onto the thing in the freezer, it's no harm just to go have a look, check out what it is, and put a little label in. Or even Joanne started doing this a couple of years back, where she went through absolutely everything in the freezer and then just basically put a list on the outside of the fridge of what was in there. And it was like, immediately you look at it and go, oh, I could do something with that, you know, rather than leaving it in the freezer. You know what I mean?
That's like internet shopping.
Shopping,
list. Brilliant.
Exactly.
I love it. It's a brilliant idea. But check the use-by dates on things like stock cubes and those kind of cans and things. And use-by dates you're looking for.
Yeah.
The best before you'll get away with some of those things. But use-by, and just do a clear out. Get rid of stuff out of the freezer. Use what you have. And that goes for everything, you know, in the bathroom and everything. Finish all those bottles of things and empty everything this week.
Absolutely.
The job of the week.
Now, I know you're a great woman for checking out websites for us, and you have a new website of the week this week.
Under the Weather. I really like this website.
Yeah. So what is this?
It's the HSE website, where it tells you about sore throats, coughs, earaches, rashes, high temperatures, and you click on a subject and it tells you what they are, what the symptoms are, what the cures are, and it gives really common sense. And I've copied some of the cold stuff there. You can see it talks about runny noses, and one in three people with a cold will get a cough and feel unwell from it. Other people will have a cold and carry on with it and be able to cope with it better than other people. But they're not viruses, and antibiotics cannot treat. Those colds are viruses, and antibiotics cannot treat viruses.
Them. Exactly.
So don't go to your doctor with a really bad head cold, because they're not going to give an antibiotic for it. You know, you need rest, you need fluids, because you're losing so much from sweating and runny noses. And it'll be bad for 2 or 3 days, and after about a week your symptoms will disappear. But sometimes, as you know, they can take a couple of weeks to disappear also.
Yeah.
And last year's cold, and it looks like it's back again, took 3 weeks for most people to get rid of, and it's hard to ride that out.
Yeah,
but you know this.
Yeah,
you know, it is hard.
Yeah, big chest. I have a big, you know, I have the asthma, so a lot of the time I get something that starts off as kind of something asthmatic and develops into a chest cold, and it can be weeks and weeks before it goes. Actually, it was funny you mentioned the thing about it not being an infection; it's a virus. So I remember one stage talking to my doctor, and he just went, "Paracetamol and hot whiskey. That's what I always do." A great doctor.
Absolutely, you're treating the symptoms.
Yeah.
You're doing the gargling with the salt and water. You're doing the honey and water. And as I say, in September, when people are buying the stuff for the schools, every house should have a small flask because it's dead handy to bring that hot drink to bed with you. The honey and lemon, and do not take the cough bottle before you go to bed. Just don't. Why should you break up the cough to keep yourself awake? You know.
Absolutely.
And they say to reduce spreading the cold, and it's hands, it's door handles and shopping trolleys.
The Best of the Morning Show.
Stephen McWhinney was our prayer coach this week. He shared some great advice as well as stories from his personal life about seeking God's wisdom when making big life decisions.
One of my favourite verses, I suppose, would be Psalm 119. As you most probably know, it's the longest psalm, you know,
in the scriptures. Right, yeah.
But Psalm 119 and verse 105 says this. It says that, you know, his word is a lamp for our feet and a light, you know, on my path.
Yeah.
And I've come to see. And it's funny that you mentioned marriage. Margaret, my wife and I just celebrated, you know, our silver anniversary.
Fantastic.
There.
Fantastic. Yeah. Congratulations, Stephen. You know, well done to you.
Well, thank you. You wonder where the years go,
don't you?
You know, 25
it's
years.
Frightening.
But I remember... You know, I wasn't a Christian very, very long before I married Margaret, and I would have been in my early 30s. So, you know, obviously, you know, I had, you know, been in, you know, relationships and different stuff like that, you know, prior to meeting Margaret. So Margaret would have been my first, you know, Christian girlfriend.
Mm.
So I was faced with the decision before I'd even asked her out. I'll be honest, I was terrified, you know, of making a mistake. I didn't want to be seen to ask, you know, someone out, and here's a guy in his early 30s, and then a few months later saying, "No, listen, you know, I made a terrible mistake. It's not you. It's the other girl, you know, sitting,
exactly,
you know, at the back of the Bible study at the prayer meeting." So looking back now, you know, I allowed myself, which was wrong, to get overly anxious because, you know, I was praying. But I was praying now at this stage out of desperation. You know, every day I was saying, "Oh Lord, you know, is it Margaret? You know, is this woman to be my wife?" And I remember, and it's always remained with me, I was praying every day and asking God, was this relationship for me, and was this woman for me? And I had my house rented out at the time. I was over at a Bible college in the UK, and I was staying with my parents whenever I come home. And I came home, I think it was the Easter break or something, and woke up early, and I decided to go down to my dad's office to pray. And I went down to pray, and again I was praying about Margaret, because I was mindful of, you know, approaching her and asking her out on a, I don't know if they use the terms, date.
Yeah, sure.
You know, so I was praying, and unknown to me, my dad had woken up and he'd come down to get a drink of water. So later on in the day, I was helping him put stuff up in the attic, and he said, "Stephen, you're up very early this morning." I said, "Yeah, I was, Dad." Yeah. He said, you're down in my office." I said, "I was." And he says, "You know, what were you doing?" And I said to him as a joke, said, "Goodness." I said, "Dad, you know, the guards wouldn't ask me all these questions." I said, "What's wrong?" "No," he said, "but I thought you sounded a little bit, anguished or a little bit troubled." I said, Dad, look, I was praying as to whether I should, you know, ask, you know, Margaret out. And I said, I'm getting very, very stressed about it. And I've never forgotten his answer. He said to me, he said, "Listen, am I your father?" I said, "You are." He said, "Do I love you?" I said, "You do." I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, if I as your earthly father," he said, "love you and want you to make the right decision," he said, "how much more your heavenly father?"
Wow.
And I said, "Yeah." Now he said, "Stephen, I'm not telling you to stop praying, but you really need to chill out a bit," he said. And he said, "your heavenly father," he said, "if you just keep asking him without getting stressed," he said, He will lead you and show you.
Wow, that is fantastic bit of leadership there, isn't it?
It was. It was incredible, really. Yeah. He was spot on. And, you know, well, the rest is history. You know, I didn't get you know, a loud booming voice. I have never personally received a loud, you know, a loud booming voice from heaven or anything like that. But
God,
through a process also of, you know, opening doors, closing doors, elimination, etc. He showed me clearly.
And that feeling of peace that comes when you're in the right place.
Amazing peace.
Yeah.
Peace, serenity. You just sense in your own spirit, this is the one.
This is the one. Lovely story, Stephen. I love that story. And, you know, you've kind of brought me on to that naturally, you know, the idea that there are people who have been there before who are, you know, older than us and more experienced in the ways of the Lord and who can be wise counsel for us. So, and to be honest with you, even at this great age that I've arrived at, I still have plenty of people that I do go to for wise counsel. I'm sure you're the same.
Yes.
So, can you talk to us a little bit about that, about who you know, what it is that you look for in somebody, you know, because in the same way, as you say, you could be praying and praying and praying and praying and getting kind of almost like getting more anxious in your prayer. I think there's also a possibility that you can go, what do you think? And you can go to almost like dozens of people and you're more confused at the end of it than you are at the beginning because you haven't necessarily really looked for the right people. So who do you look out for?
Yeah, well, you know, that's very interesting too, Ronan. I remember my last year at college also, and it's something registered with me when we were studying, you know, what they term pastoral theology and the advice. And I was, you know, I suppose quite a mature adult. I would have been in my early 30s when I went. But he said this, you know, whenever you have a big decision to make, you know, in your life, he said, always, he said, revert, as well as praying, reading, meditating on the scriptures, revert to godly counsel. He said, think of one or two individuals that you trust. They're tried and tested. Their walk matches their talk. They have been proven to give wise counsel and advice in the past. He said it doesn't always necessarily mean you have to take their advice, but certainly ask for it. And he said often the Lord will confirm things, you know, through that. So, you know, I'll be honest, I could count them on one hand, you know, personally, but there are individuals that are still there that if I had a, you know, I would always bounce it off them.
The Best of the Morning Show on Spirit Radio. Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.